It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable to get you up to speed on all the news that made headlines this week. Joining us today are Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Kevin Richert with Idaho Ed News, and Mike Sharp with KIVI Television. Hey, gang, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, let's dive right into it. Let's talk about the Idaho Public Television Superintendent of Public Instruction debate. That is coming up tonight. Kevin, what can we expect this evening? Am I correct in saying that we are going to get an appearance from incumbent Superintendent Sherry Ibarra?
That's the expectation, and that's why this is going to be an interesting debate, because this may be the one and only time between now and the election that we have both Superintendent Ibarra and Cindy Wilson on the same stage. So, and I expect that in light of that, and in light of the fact that, you know, in theory anyway, this seems like it's looking like a pretty competitive race, I think it's going to be pretty spirited debate. I think that the stakes are relatively high for this one.
Now, there was a forum earlier this week that you hosted that Ibarra did not attend, but then I believe Wilson did, so she just had some time to outline her positions?
Right. We had been trying to plan a debate since June, and we had invited both of the candidates dating back to June. Cindy Wilson accepted our invitation fairly quickly. The Ibarra campaign did not respond to our invitations, did not provide an alternative date. So at that point, it was, you know, a pretty simple decision for us to simply host a forum with the one candidate who was willing to make the time. And it's available online. People can go to our website and watch the forum in full. I thought it was a good chance to sort of get an outline of where Wilson wants to take education. Pretty heavy push on pre-K. You know, we talked at great length about the school security issues and school safety issues. So it was a chance to get more of a sense of where she would take the State Department of Education were she to be elected.
All right. So let's keep the discussion about education and Ibarra going. This one is open to everyone. I would really like to talk about that apparent campaign event that she held this week at a bar in Eagle. When people at the bar say they didn't even realize a campaign event was happening, does that even technically count? Anybody?
It's tough to hold somebody accountable for the reactions of individuals who weren't involved in the campaign event, right? Because I think that's what's happening. I think probably Kevin could speak more about the way the race has been run on both sides, both Cindy Wilson and Sherry Ibarra. There are questionable decisions. I think we can all safely say that from a journalistic point of view. And I think this is just the most recent.
Well, Kevin, Idaho Ed News sent somebody there. Mm-hmm. Give us the gloss of that experience.
Well, it was a strange experience for a lot of reasons, one of which being that it didn't have the trappings or the vibe of a typical campaign appearance. You didn't have a stump speech. You didn't have legislators or lobbyists or the kind of folks that you would expect to see at a campaign function like this. It was really kind of this very, it seemed very disorganized. I was not there, but our reporter who was there kind of conveyed the idea that it just didn't feel like much of a campaign event, that you had sort of, you know, it was more of a meet and greet with not a lot of meet or greet going on. You know, as we've since reported, the host, the owner of the bar that hosted the event, lost his license as an educator as the result of some, you know, sexual harassment complaints dating back to his time at Mountain Home Junior High School. So a very, very strange event. And the reason we went was because we've been trying to get a sense from the Ibarra campaign of what is she doing? How is she campaigning? Where is she campaigning? This was the one event, the only event that was posted on her campaign Facebook page. So by default, this is the one we attended. We've been trying to get a feel for how is the incumbent running for re-election. So this was the event we went to basically because there was no other one. We had no other choice.
I think it's important to remember, too, that this isn't new. Sherry Ibarra in 2014 ran the primary race, which she ended up winning, obviously, to get the nomination as a Republican in a very similar way. And that's why a lot of people were caught off guard when she won that nomination, because she's not a polished politician. And I think a lot of times especially those of us who cover these things over and over and over again, we get surprised when somebody is successful in the way that she has been, winning both primaries and both the general election last time, without having that polish that we're expecting. But I think probably that's appealing to some people. I think some people are looking for that.
Well, I think this really goes beyond polish, because the co-hosting her campaign event with essentially a disgraced former teacher,
yes,
really raised a lot of eyebrows. And this past week, her opponent, Cindy Wilson, was endorsed by Jim Jones, the former Republican Attorney General of Idaho and former Chief Justice of the Idaho Supreme Court. And I asked him about this event, and he thought it was extremely troubling that when you're in the public eye at an official event, I mean, he said, you can have all the friends you want. You can go to bars, whatever. But when you're a public official representing the state and you're in a role where you advocate for kids, to stand with a disgraced former teacher as a way to curry campaign favor seems unseemly.
Right. And just for the record, I was speaking specifically about the way the campaign or the event seemed to be run. I wasn't talking necessarily about who was hosting it or who was there.
Right. And I think it's worth noting, I mean, while the bar owner and the host of this event has never admitted to these allegations, they are serious allegations of sexual harassment. I mean, this goes beyond, anything that could be construed as, a possible misunderstanding or a poor choice of words. You know, what he is accused of doing is pretty bright line harassment, hostile work environment. I mean, it's a textbook example of bad behavior. If, these are allegations that he never admitted to. That said, these are serious allegations.
I was also interested, though, in Idaho Ed News' quote from Ibarra at the event, where she said, "Oh, well, he was punished for that. He's still my friend, and there are no kids here. We're at a fundraiser." That's, I think, what maybe struck kind of a jarring note for the state's education
level. And I think that's part of maybe why the story has resonated in the past few days.
Just a lot of questionable decisions coming from that campaign. One more question about debates before we move on. We've got two more debates coming up. There's the 2nd Congressional District on Sunday, and there's a governor's debate Monday. Anything that we should be especially keeping our eyes open for those two?
Boy, I think the debates already have been interesting. We had the Secretary of State's debate last night, which was pretty feisty for a Secretary of State debate. And I think this is going to be kind of must-see TV, particularly Monday when Paulette Jordan and Brad Little debate on live statewide TV.
And I expect it will be a lot more of a spirited debate. I mean, the two candidates met last week. They had a forum at the College of Idaho that was focused on
fiscal. A sit-down kind of chat.
It was a forum. It was definitely not a debate. It was certainly not couched as a debate. It was more of a... It was like a fireside chat about fiscal policy, because you had, Jasper Lacalze from the College of Idaho dressed in a cardigan sweater, looking like, your classic professor, ministering over a discussion of fiscal policy. I don't expect it will be quite as collegial come Monday night.
And to their credit, both candidates are meeting for multiple debates. KBOI or CBS 2 News has a debate coming up on Saturday at 11 a.m. at the Riverside between the two of them. So there are multiple opportunities to see these candidates in action.
We're speaking with Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press, Kevin Richard of Idaho Ed News, and Mike Sharp with KIVI Television. Mike, there was a story this week about pot and Jim Belushi. We are not making this up. A stone's throw from the Treasure Valley in Malheur County, Oregon, a measure that could legalize the sale of marijuana, is on the ballot this November. What is going on there, and where does Jim Belushi fit in?
It's just really fascinating. I've loved following this story. It's nice because our station is out in Nampa. It gives us the ability to go out and cover some of those issues affecting eastern Oregon as well. So obviously, I think everybody knows Oregon passed the legalization of marijuana, but Malheur County has never allowed the dispensaries to be open inside the county boundaries. The city of Ontario, or people in the city of Ontario, are trying to push for the ability to do that, because they have seen the benefits in surrounding counties of tax money. schools have benefited from receiving some of those dollars. How much benefit they've received is questionable at this point. We're still kind of waiting for those numbers to really start settling in as marijuana sales have been legal for a very short time at this point. But you bring up Jim Belushi. Jim Belushi came to town. He was in Ontario for a fundraising event for the Malheur Can. It's the group that's fighting for the legalization of sales of cannabis in Malheur County. And he's, you know, the celebrity that they chose to bring in to help raise those funds. And I think that's going to be, when it comes to issues that are on the ballot that aren't going to be seen by the people who are maybe listening to this right now, that could really affect the people who are listening to this right now, is what they decide on that, because it could end up becoming similar to what people have seen in Moscow, right, where people are crossing the border and it's the ability to go and get marijuana by driving 15 minutes. It'll affect
right. Ontario is not a far drive.
It's not, and it's right across the border. And we're talking about some very rural, conservative thinking counties, including Malheur County. I mean, it's not a progressive county by any stretch of the imagination. So, I mean, how is this going to affect Washington County and Payette County and Canyon County, one of the most populous counties in the state, to have the legal marijuana so close to their borders?
We'll have to wait and see how that goes. But Jim Belushi, SNL alum in our area, you can't make this stuff up. We are continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. In studio today are Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. Betsy, you said there is a new Idaho judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Who is this?
That's right. Ryan Nelson, who since 2009 has been the chief counsel for Melaleuca in Idaho Falls, was confirmed by the Senate last night on a 51-44 vote. And Melaleuca, of course, is the company that's owned by Frank Vandersloot, who's a very active political fundraiser for the Republican Party. And Ryan Nelson's background before he came to Melaleuca included working for the U.S. Department of Justice and for the Senate and in a variety of roles. He's an Idaho native, a sixth-generation Idahoan, a BYU law school graduate. But his nomination was controversial. It was solidly opposed by Democrats. In the end, only one Democrat, Doug Jones from Alabama, voted in favor. All the rest of the Senate Democrats who voted against his nomination. And there were issues raised during his confirmation hearing that he is seen as, quote, a right-wing ideologue rather than a fair judge. Now, our senators, Crapo and Risch, strongly disagree with that and say that he will be a fair umpire of what the law is. It's funny because it's echoes of some other court nomination arguments we've been hearing lately.
Shades of that.
but there is one Idaho seat on the Ninth Circuit, and our judge, Randy Smith, took senior status in August. And so this will fill that seat, and Ryan Nelson has been confirmed.
Well, we've got somebody on the Ninth Circuit now in San Francisco. Idaho's representing. Let's get back to the election. Campaign finance reports came out this week. Betsy and Kevin, what are some of our initial takeaways from these reports?
Well, to me, the really big news.
Betsy's eyes are lighting up, by the way.
I've been living and breathing campaign finance reports the last few days. To me, the really big news was that the fundraising in the governor's race, which is such a big deal, you would think this is the biggest thing on the ballot, was far eclipsed by the fundraising in the campaigns over the two initiatives that are on the ballot, particularly the one about horse race betting and, quote, historical horse racing machines, whether those should be allowed to be located at Idaho horse racing tracks. The people on both sides of that initiative since the primary have raised a heck of a lot more than either Paulette Jordan or Brad Little.
Yeah, the propositions, at least the horse racing, it seems like they're just shoveling money on both sides into that one. Any sort of equal representation on that? Both sides getting about the same amounts?
It's not that far off. I mean, the operators of Les Bois Park, Treasure Valley Racing, entirely funded their campaign to the tune of $2 million+. And the Coeur d'Alene Tribe funded almost all of the $2.7 million that the other side raised. They also got a bunch of individual donations, and they've been promoting that. Doyle Beck gave $2,500. But it's mainly those two players on the two sides of that issue, if you look at the financials.
Let's talk a little bit about the financial statements for the governor position. Brad Little raised more than Paulette Jordan, but interestingly, Paulette got thousands of small donations under $50. Looks like Brad Little only got one such donation in that reporting period.
I think that actually wasn't accurate.
Right. I mean, what I think was, to me, the big takeaway out of the Sunshine Reports and the governor's race, we all knew coming out of those primaries that both nominees were going to have a job ahead of them to try to unify their party and try to bring the factions within the party into the fold. When I looked at Brad Little's Sunshine Report, you could definitely see evidence of the party kind of coalescing behind Little after that really bruising primary. I mean, Tommy Ahlquist gave Brad Little $5,000. Milford Terrell, who was Congressman Raul Labrador's campaign treasurer, he gave $5,000 to Little. More than 30 Republican legislators, I think was my count, and legislators, conservative and moderate legislators within that Republican Party. Contrast that to Paulette Jordan and her fundraising report. I could only find one Democratic legislator who gave money to Jordan's campaign, and that was Margaret Gannon, and she is a new legislator. She is actually the legislator who succeeded Paulette Jordan, who was appointed to fill Jordan's seat in the House when Jordan resigned to run full-time for governor. So I don't see a whole lot of evidence when I look at that Sunshine Report of establishment Democrats within Idaho getting behind Jordan's candidacy, where they did give quite a bit of money to Kristen Collum, the lieutenant governor's candidate, and gave some money to Cindy Wilson in the superintendent's race.
Well, I think it's interesting to talk about that, to bring up the superintendent again. Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Cindy Wilson dramatically outraised the incumbent Shiri Ibarra. What does that tell you?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, Ibarra has run and won campaigns in the past where she's been outspent. So this is not new. And while, yes, it's a 4-to-1 difference between what Wilson has for the final few weeks and Ibarra, it's not a lot of money for either candidate. I mean, part-time job for lieutenant governor, both of those nominees raised far more money. And you know, as opposed to this full-time position that administers over the State Department of Education, that has a seat on the land board, a very important position in state government, not a lot of money really coming into either candidate.
I think one of the important things to remember in talking about that race as well as the gubernatorial race is a lot of times the money that they're raising is going to be used, the majority of it's going to be used to get their name recognition up. It's going to be used for paid advertising, television advertising, which obviously coming from the television world, we always see November coming up and we say, okay, this is going to be a big deal for us. What ends up happening in this race is you've got a candidate, Paulette Jordan, who views her support as a population of people who may not be watching television as much. So she is targeting kind of a different style of communication. And a lot of the advertising she's getting is free advertising, which is coming from getting on large shows and getting on getting publicity from who she is and what she stands for. And what you had in most recent years is you had a candidate, A.J. Belukoff, who was spending his own money and knew he had to get up on television as quickly as possible. And once he got up on television, Butch Otter was going to have to fundraise to get up on television to keep it equal. Well, Brad Little knows he's not going to have to do that. So it's just a different strategy that these people are playing. I don't think we're seeing like a shift in the way gubernatorial races are going to be run in the future necessarily, unless we see the same two candidates in 4 years. But we have very unique campaigns for sure.
I think to go back to the superintendent's race, I think those reports really painted a picture of two very different ways of campaigning and pursuing this office.
Explain.
Shiri Ibarra had only 16 individual contributions from a total of 18 people, because two of them were from couples. Cindy Wilson had 200, and they were from individuals all over the state of Idaho. And she has been traveling and working and meeting with groups and doing a very out there outreach type of campaign. And Shiri Ibarra clearly hasn't. Mm-hmm. As Kevin said, however, Shiri Ibarra has shown in the past that with virtually no money and almost no campaign activity, she can win a race.
And a lot of Ibarra's money came from timber and logging groups, which really, you know, is not directly associated with running the State Department of Education, but is very directly tied to that seat on the land board.
We are in the midst of our reporter roundtable, speaking with Kevin Richard today of Idaho Education News, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. Mike, your team had a story this week about how a shortage of psychiatrists working with children in Idaho is raising concerns. There are some pretty shocking numbers in that report. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, it's kind of funny because I've been here a few times in the last month, and it seems like everything always comes back to kind of the same issues. And I think this is one of those stories that connects to stories that we've been doing in odd ways. What they found was we have something like 5 child psychiatrists for 100,000 children in the state. And what is suggested or recommended is 47 per 100,000 children.
That is an amazing disparity.
Right. It's remarkable how poorly we are equipped to deal with children who are in need of that kind of care. And all these other issues that we talk about feed back into it, right? We had the Columbine principal who was in town this week promoting school safety and saying kids needed the ability to turn to somebody when they were troubled, right? Well, okay, you can't turn to somebody if you have to wait 3 months to get an appointment. And once you get in, you may not be able to have a regular appointment. So that care isn't there for them. You have children who are going without mental health care, who are then ending up committing crimes, ending up in juvie, ending up turning 18 and then committing larger crimes that are related directly, as I've mentioned on this program before, to their mental health, and then clogging up our prison system. And we have to send another 150 inmates to Texas because we don't have the room here. Everything seems to work together in a way that is clear once you step apart from it, but is muddy enough that nobody has to take responsibility when you get close enough to it. And this is just – it's kind of – it's a symptom of what is going wrong in a lot of our communities. And when you talk about Ada County and you talk about Boise, I know if my child has a concern, I'm going to be able to find a doctor. Because a lot of those child psychiatrists are in Ada County. If you're in Jim County and there is one person who is able to provide that kind of care, it's going to be more difficult. What do you do then? What happens if your kid ends up threatening another student or saying something in school because they aren't or they are unwell? Are they going to be able to get a fair chance at turning things around and eventually becoming an adult that is ready to contribute to society?
Well, we'll have to see how this shortfall is addressed, hopefully. So some plan is in the works for the long term, because that is unbelievable how different those numbers are.
Well, a lot of times it starts with kind of a recognition of where the deficits are. And I think that's where we are now. So our follow-up stories will be on what is being done. Is there – and really one of the concerns is you can't attract young child psychiatrists to an area that where you're going to be making quite a bit less than what a child psychologist could be – or psychiatrist could be making in California or Nevada, because they have considerable debt that they get trying to earn their certification to have that kind of capability. More has to be done to attract those people. But once again, attracting teachers has become a problem. Attracting anyone has become a problem in certain populations or in certain industries to the state of Idaho.
Right. A lot of these issues, as you said, very interwoven. Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, we have just a couple of minutes left. Kevin, it's your soapbox now. Tell us about the Chicago Marathon. This is your time to brag.
Wow, it was amazing. So this is one of the largest marathons in the world, and there are 45,000 people who compete. And you have elite runners like Mo Farah, who's won gold for Britain, who won the marathon in the men's division, and then you have non-elite runners like me, who are just out there to have a good time and not to do anything fast. It was amazing, though. I mean,
you were one of how many running the marathon?
45,000 runners, wow. But there were hundreds of thousands of people on really not a good day weather-wise. It was cloudy, it's kind of drizzly, kind of dreary, just hanging out and cheering for, you know, weekend warriors like me and the rest of us in the back of the pack. And just a lot of high fives, just a lot of cheering, a lot of music, just a real celebration. I mean, it was a real chance to see the city and take it all in. And then when it was all over, got some Chicago deep dish pizza and ate it without a shred of guilt. So it was a good day.
That is how you do it. A big thanks to our reporters today, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press.